This is the takeaway for June 26, 2015.
This is the takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry, and that's what it sounded like from the steps of the U.S. Supreme Court today.
Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet
This is an emotional day, personally. Yes, I've been working on this issue for many, many years, but to be able to know that our family, that our daughter, now has her parents married in every single state across this country is a big deal. It's an emotional day, and I'm very proud of this country today, I have to say.
Advocates of same-sex marriage celebrating outside the Supreme Court the 5-4 decision declaring marriage equality. President Barack Obama delivered an emotional statement marking this as a historic milestone with some stirring words from the White House Rose Garden.
This morning, the Supreme Court recognized that the Constitution guarantees marriage equality. In doing so, they've reaffirmed that all Americans are entitled to the equal protection of the law, that all people should be treated equally, regardless of who they are or who they love.
The decision in Obergefell v. Hodges came down today at nearly the end of the Supreme Court term. The majority opinion was written by Justice Anthony Kennedy, whose passionate feelings about discrimination against gays seemed to come out during oral arguments months ago, and that passion was borne out today, once again, in a sweeping decision. Marriage is a keystone of the nation's social order, Justice Kennedy wrote. There is no difference between same and opposite-sex couples with respect to this principle. The right to personal choice regarding marriage is inherent in the concept of individual autonomy. The abiding connection between marriage and liberty is why the court invalidated interracial marriage bans under the Due Process Clause in the case Loving v. Virginia years ago. This decision requires states to license same-sex marriage as well as to recognize same-sex marriages from other states. And Justice Kennedy added, protecting the right to marry safeguards children and families and thus draws meaning from related rights of child rearing, procreation, and education. Above and beyond the relatively narrow issue of marriage alone, with these words, the gay community is explicitly recognized by the U.S. Supreme Court as part of the American mainstream, and its successes and contributions a central part of the American exercise of freedom. All four dissenting justices wrote opinions today, including Chief Justice Roberts, who for the first time read his lengthy dissent from the bench, saying that this decision amounted to the court usurping the rights of states to make laws. Justice Scalia said that this decision represented a danger to U.S. democracy, although both Roberts and Scalia graciously said that no one's celebration today should be begrudged by anyone. Jeffrey Rosen, president and CEO of the National Constitution Center and professor at George Washington University Law School, is with us. Professor, I gather we've just seen constitutional history in the making before our eyes.
Well, it's a tremendous milestone. It's one of the most dramatic decisions that I have encountered during the 2 decades that I've been covering the court. And what is so striking is both the passion and sweep of the majority decision and the dissents. Justice Kennedy's majority decision is expansive. It says that the rights of autonomy and freedom are at the heart both of the liberty protected by the Due Process Clause and the equality protected by the Equal Protection Clause. And it talks movingly about the centrality of marriage to people's self-definition and to their ability to live happy and fulfilled lives. And then you have the dissents, which, as you suggested, are equally passionate in their denunciation of the idea that the court has usurped the right of the states to make their own decisions, and that basically that this is a threat to American democracy. But what's so striking about both the majority and the dissent is that the passion has to do with jurisprudential principle, not personal preference. Justice Kennedy has long been committed to the idea that individual autonomy protects personal and significant life choices, and he's entirely consistent in extending that principle to same-sex marriage. Similarly, Chief Justice Roberts is equally consistent in defending judicial restraint. Some people may be confused by his 2 decisions just yesterday upholding the Affordable Care Act, and then today voting to uphold laws restricting same-sex marriage. But both are consistent with this principle of deference to democratic decision-making. So I think it's significant in its practical effects. It's riveting constitutional drama. And I just hope that all of our listeners will read the decisions, both the majority decision and the all four of the dissents, because this is a constitutional education on an incredibly important day for the United States of America.
It's also a social and cultural education. Would you say that from this point on, at no point can gays and lesbians in America be defined as a fringe community, as anything other than the mainstream of America in American life?
Yes, the decision is unequivocal in welcoming gays and lesbians into the full protections of the Constitution, both the Equal Protection Clause and the Due Process Clause. It says that any attempt to consign them to a separate status would demean them and infringe on their dignity. And it really talks about how marriage has evolved over the millennia and has become ever more inclusive, how old rules excluding women from full citizenship have been repudiated, and African Americans as well. And it's part of this trajectory of what Justice Ginsburg has called an increasingly inclusive constitution. It's a beautiful word that she uses, that has come to embrace gays and lesbians as full American citizens.
One of the things that I find striking in the evolution of this decision and this entire debate as we've come towards this decision today is I began really thinking of marriages and marriage licenses as a very administrative, almost trivial sense of the exercise of public and state, regulatory authority. But Justice Kennedy really extrapolates from the marriage license almost the entire breadth and width of American liberty and freedom.
He does indeed. You had all sorts of great excerpts that you read from the decision, but his final paragraph: no union is more profound than marriage. It embodies the highest ideals of love, fidelity, devotion, sacrifice, and family. It would misunderstand these men and women to say they disrespect the idea of marriage. Their hope is not to be condemned to live in loneliness, excluded from one of civilization's oldest institutions. They ask for equal dignity in the eyes of the law. The Constitution grants them that right.
Jeffrey, your reactions to the president's remarks, I mean, we're really seeing a kind of interesting confluence of the various branches of government embracing something that is a deep social change in America that, as the president said, came quickly like a thunderbolt.
It is remarkable to see history in the making and to see both the president and the court, as you said, acknowledging and codifying this social change. Throughout our lifetime, the Constitution has expanded to take account of new consensus is about what the Constitution means, and it was so striking that the president talked not only about the court's decision, but about the countless small acts of courage of millions of people across decades, parents who love their children no matter what. He was signifying that the court's decision is the culmination and codification, not the cause of this expansion of equality for gays and lesbians. And the court, interestingly, signified something similar. Where at the end of the majority opinion by Justice Kennedy, the court cites the lower court decisions, both federal and state, and the statutes that have been passed expanding gay and lesbian equality. So unlike the Brown versus Board of Education decision, which almost acted as if the court was creating a right of equality by judicial fiat, here both the court and the president are acknowledging that it really was the courage of gays and lesbians over decades that changed the hearts and minds of the American people in a way that, as President Obama said, vindicated the belief that ordinary people can do extraordinary things. Wow.
And you can hear, you know, the president saying our LGBT brothers and sisters. You know, this is a change of rhetoric and language that is going to be felt really throughout the United States, where you don't hear LGBT said as though it was a mainstream group. And this is something that is an embrace that is very, very emotional. It goes way beyond marriage here. I'm wondering if there's a sense in which the court is ahead of America, that the court is ahead of politicians, because Bill Clinton endorsed the Defense of Marriage Act. It was a campaign issue, but nobody advocated striking it down. The Obama administration pulled away from defending that act in the Department of Justice. So a politician, it seemed, have tiptoed towards this, while the court today has really thrown the door wide open.
It has, but I think this is one of those remarkable occasions where the court is perfectly in tune with public opinion rather than stepping too far ahead of it or lagging too far behind it. It's the politicians who took longer to catch up. But remember, just 2 years ago, the court refused to take a marriage equality case because the liberal justices didn't think that the country was ready. And Justice Ginsburg has so famously said that the court leapt ahead of public opinion when it decided Roe v. Wade. But here, both the polls, which are being transformed before our eyes, international opinion, where Ireland, of all places, recognized a right of gay marriage just the other day, and in the U.S., where it seems that both Democrats and Republicans, liberals and conservative citizens, have come to embrace the idea of gay and lesbian equality, makes this really an occasion where the court seems fully the partner of the American people. Now, it has to be said, the dissenting opinions do not agree with that, and these are four very passionate dissents from Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Scalia, Alito, and Thomas that really accuse the court of having subverted American democracy and second-guessed the American people on this topic, even as they went out of their way, as you mentioned, to not begrudge the celebrations. So there's a debate on the court about whether or not the court is or is not being properly deferential to majority sentiment. But President Obama and the majority of the court seem to believe that they're in step. And there's a sense, what makes this such a constitutional moment is that you sense the court codifying social respect for gays and lesbians. Mm. Marriage is obviously an act of social respect, and gays and lesbians are included in that. But more broadly, as you suggest, they are now fully included in American citizenship, not because of what the court did, but because of what the people have done, and the court isn't somehow codifying and blessing that.
Jeffrey Rosen, President and CEO of the National Constitution Center, and professor at George Washington University Law School. Thanks as always, Jeff.
Thank you, John.
So are you with the majority or are you a dissenter? Where do you stand on this decision by the U.S. Supreme Court?
Hi, John. Historic day. This is Bruce Scherer in Tacoma, Washington. I never really thought I would live long enough to see this day. How times have changed in the last 62 years, and much for the better, in my humble opinion. Thank you.
This is Matt from Charlotte. I do not support the Supreme Court decision regarding gay marriage. The states have a right to enact laws that govern their citizens, and the federal government is usurping the rights of the state governments in this case.
This is Lexi from Omaha, Nebraska. I'm so excited I can't even think straight. The feeling that I can have my wife and be anywhere in the country is completely indescribable to me. All I can say is hashtag love wins.
Suzette on Facebook, I am for equality. Love is love. I feel the Supreme Court made the correct decision. Orlando, Florida, marriage is a religious institution and government should stay out of it, thus going to church in front of preacher and getting married. Abraham Scott Henson on Facebook, for me as a Baha'i, that's my religion, marriage is defined as a union between a man and a woman. But personally, still speaking as a Baha'i, I believe that same-sex couples should be able to have a civil union and enjoy all the legal benefits that any married couple would have. We're continuing this conversation. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. This is The Takeaway. Among the people with questions and people who might have to change their lifestyle and their policy as a result of the decision of the Supreme Court today is Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. President Piper, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me. Honored to join you.
Now, you're concerned about your tax-exempt status because of the way you deal with the homosexuality on your campus. Can you explain how that would work?
Well, Oklahoma Wesleyan University is a Christian university. We were founded and chartered as such over 100 years ago. We have a policy that adheres to what we believe is the healthiest sexual behavioral choice out there, and that is behave according to biblical standards, and you will be more sexually healthy than otherwise. We expect our faculty and our students to live within that honor code and that behavioral code, and we've been doing that for over 100 years, and we do not intend to change that. As I understand the conversation between Verrilli and Alito in the Supreme Court hearing, our Solicitor General actually confirmed Alito's concerns that our tax-exempt status as a Christian university could be revoked as a result of this new legislation or this new law.
And what would that mean financially for your school?
Well, every college or university across the land, whether it's public or private, enjoys 501c3 status and therefore is tax exempt because of the good that we do within our culture and within our communities and the welfare that we enhance and provide through education. If that tax exempt status were taken away, people could not make a contribution to the university and deduct it. Our property, we would be subject to property taxes and sales taxes, and we would be in a very different financial model than OU or OSU or my alma mater, Michigan State University. All of a sudden, the Christian university would be financially liable to pay taxes, whereas these other universities would not.
Do you buy the argument that gay rights is actually a code word for a gay agenda, which envisions a much more sexually problematic sort of set of behaviors in the future?
Well, I can't read somebody else's mind, so I think in answering your question, John, I'd have to say this. I can tell you what I believe and what I think and what I know based on the empirical evidence therein. The healthiest sexual choice is a monogamous heterosexual choice. The Centers for Disease Control data confirms that. History confirms that. Personal experience confirms that. We're trying to teach our students to adhere to the healthiest behavioral standards, whether it be sexually or otherwise. And I don't believe that an educational institution should be penalized for promoting that proven sexual behavior that accrues to an individual and community's health more so than other choices. So I know what I believe. I don't know what other individuals think or believe. I can't read their minds. What I can do is read their words and listen to what they say.
But the court says there's no evidence that there is a distinction between health in the behavior of same-sex couples versus heterosexual couples, and certainly finds no evidence that that would affect children's health or family health in any way.
Well, the court needs to read the Centers for Disease Control data then, because the data is out there. Any behavioral choice other than a heterosexual monogamous choice accrues to the disadvantage of the individuals involved therein. Incrementally, we have the data out there. If you engage in a behavioral choice that compromises that traditional Judeo-Christian standard, you are subjecting yourself to sexually transmitted disease potential over and above what you would have had otherwise. And common sense tells you that, too, not just the CDC.
Choices and sort of moral conundrums to be thought through in the wake of this decision of the U.S. Supreme Court. He's thinking about them in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Everett Piper is president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. President Piper, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Waiting for this my whole life. I didn't even think it was possible. And here we are today. I'm just overwhelmed. We have to take on that responsibility, and I'm up for the task.
This just changes everything. This just says that I'm not a freak. I'm normal. I'm like everyone else.
I came down here today to celebrate because I'm actually getting married in September in Michigan. So today is really important for me because I can actually get legally married now.
Lots of anticipation for today's Supreme Court decision on same-sex marriage. Some memorable moments there of celebration in front of the Stonewall Inn in New York City's Greenwich Village. Stonewall, of course, the scene of a protest and confrontation between gays and police trying to arrest them back in 1969. Stonewall is a place where some of the gay rights history referenced by the president and the Supreme Court justices today began. And it's been a week of pins and needles for one Joseph Vitale.
It's Thursday, June 25th. Possible decision day awaits us. Had a good night's sleep last night. Spent a good part of last evening helping build Cooper's Thomas the train set. I wish the entire United States can share in our happiness and joy when it comes to our loving son. We hope to be on the right side of history, and we hope to be on the right side of history real soon. This is very important for us as a family, but more importantly as a country. So let's see what happens. 10 o'clock. We'll be watching.
That's from the audio diary of Joseph Vitale of New York City, who agreed to share his anticipation, his own and his family's, for today's decision. Joseph Vitale and his partner Robert Talmas got married in New York in September of 2011. They adopted their son Cooper, that he refers to there, in Ohio. We spoke with Joe and Robert just after the news broke, along with Omar Gonzalez-Pagan, staff attorney at Lambda Legal, a lifelong advocate for gay rights. He's also a co-counsel in Henry v. Hodges, a challenge to Ohio's marriage recognition ban, which is one of the cases the U.S. Supreme Court ruled on today.
We were on the right side of history today, and I think it's very important because it's not only a victory for the Thomas Vitamilli family, but for everyone that has fought this great fight for decades, and what a great feeling it is.
How old is Cooper?
Cooper is 2 months. Two years.
How does a two-year-old celebrate a Supreme Court decision?
Well, literally, if we went on air about 30 seconds ago, you would have been hearing him screaming frozen in the background. He's just bouncing off the walls. He could tell I started crying, and he gave me that look like, why was I crying? And we immediately knew that he would break into song, as he always does, and it was just amazing.
Robert, are you going to add to the mushy stuff, or do you have a sober assessment of what's happened today on this historical day?
He's waving to you through the window. Literally, Cooper is screaming. I'm surprised you can't hear him in the background.
So, Omar, you've spent your entire life on these legal challenges. In many ways, the body of legal thought that would get us to this moment has reached, in some sense, a real cusp or a conclusion. What do you do now?
Well, this is a landmark ruling that we have seen today, and it recognizes the common humanity and dignity that we all share. Indeed, the court based its decision on the very intrinsic dignity-bestowing power of marriage. But there is much work to be done, and I think today is a time of celebration and a time of reflection, and then we keep going forward. There's so much work that needs to happen with regards to protecting all of our LGBT youth in school, making sure that they have opportunities. The fact that 40% of homeless youth are LGBT, to make sure that our transgender brothers and sisters have adequate access to healthcare and security. That is something that we need to make sure that all of us can live in a country where we feel safe, where we can pursue our liberty and our happiness. And this is a giant leap forward, and we hope it's a catalyst for us to be able to continue to do our work.
Omar, does Justice Kennedy's contention that same-sex marriage equality is a part of the Equal Protection Clause and a part of the right to due process, does it make the argument on some of the questions in education that you were referring to there much easier going forward?
Well, I'm sure this decision is something that we will study and be able to use in the future. There is something spoken about how we want to have lives as equals, full of opportunity and full of security. And this decision is a wonderful decision by Justice Kennedy, and we believe that there is much that we can get from it. I'm just going to read a little line from the conclusion, but Justice Kennedy writes about the plaintiffs and same-sex couples and LGBT people that they're pleased that they do respect it so deeply that they seek to find its fulfillment for themselves. And I think that's what we seek in all of our cases. And this is a giant leap forward, and we hope it is a catalyst for the future.
A giant leap forward indeed. Omar Gonzalez-Pagan is a staff attorney at Lambda Legal. He was co-counsel in one of the cases that the Supreme Court ruled on today. So, Joseph Vitale, what does it feel like? Some legal scholars were saying earlier that this decision and the language of this decision particularly clearly inaugurates the LGBT community into the mainstream of America. I mean, you may have certainly believed that already, but this removes any doubt. There's no such thing as a fringe community called the gay community, right?
Correct. We're born again. We feel free to travel through all 50 states. And I think that's the most important thing. We had equality here in New York State, our home state, but we were actually prevented from traveling, or we chose not to travel to 13 states because there was such inequality in those states. And now just to be able to travel from point A to point B, knowing that our marriage is valid, that our son will have both of his parents listed on his birth certificates, we can't express the feeling.
Well, if you see three blissed out folks on the streets of Greenwich Village today, it just might be Joseph Vitale and Robert Thomas and their son Cooper, but it also could be any number of hundreds or thousands of people in New York who are celebrating today. Joe and Robert, thanks so much.
Thank you very much, and thanks. This is for everyone that's fought for equality.
Anthems were invented a long time ago for the Anglican Church whenever it had something to crow about. Now nations can have anthems. There's a healthcare company called Anthem. Anne Rand wrote an end-of-the-world novel called Anthem. We say summer should have an anthem.
Hi, it's Steve calling from Brooklyn by way of Virginia. And Blue Sky by the Allman Brothers Band has always put a smile on my face in the summertime.
Hi, my name is Annie. I'm calling from Louisville, Kentucky. And to me, the summertime song is one you never hear anymore. Summertime, 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 summertime.
Thank you, Stephen Annie. Nice suggestions, but we've thrown a little bit of democracy in here and have a vote going for the grand anthem of summer that for all time will be the anthem of summer. Okay, maybe that's too much, but John Schaefer, host of Soundcheck and New Sounds at our partner station WNYC, has been compiling the many votes for us. It's been great fun, and after a lot of participation, we're going to reveal a winner. John Schaefer, welcome back.
Thank you, John.
This is an exciting moment.
Very exciting moment. Where's my drum roll?
The envelope, please. All the envelopes.
Well, you know, I thought earlier this week, I thought I was going to come here to crown Dancing in the Streets as the number one summer anthem of all time because it was out in front in the voting. And then a funny thing happened. Last night when the voting closed, I had to go through almost 500 pages of votes. And you know what I found? A bunch of votes for the Van Halen version of Dancing in the Streets. We had put the Martha and the Vandellas version on our ballot, and it did really well. But when you added in the Van Halen versions of the same song, now suddenly, Dancing in the Streets was, in fact, the number one song. But now here is where the story gets even more interesting. Because in mining through this huge write-in vote,
right,
two songs kept coming up. One of them was Summer Wind by Frank Sinatra.
Oh, fabulous. That was suggested by one of our callers on Facebook earlier in the week.
The other, the song that got more write-ins than anyone else and perhaps the most impressive write-in campaign since Steve Garvey was written in as an all-star back in the 80s, DJ Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince with Summertime.
Led by our listener in Oakland.
Hi, my name is Cherie from Oakland, California. Released in 1991, I was 2 years out of high school, and this is the go-to song for me. It's late in the day, and I ain't been on the court yet. Hustle to the mall to get me a short set. Yeah, I got on sneaks, but I need a new pair, because basketball courts in the summer got girls there.
And one listener wrote, Summertime by Will Smith. Come on, Johns! And another listener wrote, I can't believe that's not on the list. In fact, it was originally on the list, and I knocked it off because, I was being told to make room for more recent stuff. Well, the recent stuff didn't do so well in our survey. But this piece, now almost 25 years old, did really, really well and ended up at number 2 on our list of great summer songs.
Fabulous.
And, John, you had asked last time about Vivaldi's Summer, and I said how it didn't really pass. It certainly didn't pass the sing-along chorus test, and I wasn't quite sure about the roll-down-the-window test either.
Yeah.
But at least one listener agreed with you and thought that Summer by Vivaldi belonged on the list.
Here's a suggestion from one of our listeners.
Hi, my name is Maya Martin, and I'm calling from Chicago, Illinois. My summer anthem is Summertime Sadness by Lana Del Rey. I love summer, but there's something melancholy about how fleeting it is. Once it's started, you know it will be over soon. Oh, my God, I feel it in the air. Telephone wires above are sizzling like a snare. Honey, I'm fine. I feel it everywhere. Nothing scares me anymore.
That's sweet.
And there were a couple of write-in votes for that song as well by Lana Del Rey.
And we're welcoming our Chicago listeners in this summer. This is our first summer.
Well, that was actually a
great suggestion.
It's a good suggestion, yeah.
Our listeners are often very topical. Any chance this could make it?
This is Cree White from Charlotte, North Carolina. My choice of a summer anthem would be Fight the Power by Public Enemy. Our freedom of speech is freedom of death. We got to fight the powers that be. Fight the power.
Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power. It appears that our government at this time is not capable of finding a way for African Americans and Caucasians to coexist here in America. Something needs to be done. We need to take matters into our own hands and fight, not necessarily violently, but definitely fight. So So the summer thing for me on that tune is that it was at the beginning of Do the Right Thing, the Spike Lee tune, which was a very summer scene.
There's something kind of anthemic about that whole album by Public Enemy, you know, and that song has legs, as they say. It has staying power. It's still with us. It still speaks to us. That's kind of a year-round anthem, I would say.
Let's finish out the voting here. I mean, you did get a bunch of songs that everyone's going to know.
Let me now back up and run down our top four.
Okay, great.
Number one, Dancing in the Streets.
Got it.
Martha and the Vandellas with an assist from Van Halen. Number two, The Impressive Write-In Campaign for Summertime by DJ Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince, a.k.a. Will Smith. Number three, Love and Spoonful, lead in the race all the way to the finish line, but nicked at the wire with Summer in the City. And number four, Hot Fun in the Summertime by Sly and the Family Stone.
End of the spring and here she comes back. High, 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 high day. Well, summer days, oh, summer days.
So what are you going to do now that you have all these anthems? You going to roll your windows down? And see you all over town.
Right. I'm just going to drive aimlessly up and down the road singing, you know, playing John for you, Vivaldi's Summer.
How is that different from what you do every day?
Busted.
John Schaefer, host of Soundcheck and New Sounds at our partner station, WNYC. Thanks, and thanks for being a part of this right at the beginning of the summer. And
thank you, John. Happy summer.
Happy summer to you. Ah, the sounds of summer here on The Takeaway. It's a tradition. Check out thetakeaway.org this weekend for a summer playlist of our very own, compiled for your listening pleasure.
Support for The Takeaway comes from Curious.com, committed to helping people learn more than 15,000 skills like Hungarian, hula hooping, and HTML. Curious.com. Grow your skills. Learn more at curious.com/PRI.
If you want to catch up on that conversation or listen back to anything on the program, check us out at thetakeaway.org. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. Have a great weekend. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.